This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Wayne Cabot. The world is watching to see if President Trump brings America into Israel's war with Iran. Multiple sources tell ABC News that the president has been given and is considering a range of options by his national security team, including using U.S. military assets to strike Iranian nuclear facilities. Consequences could ripple across the area and make American troops targets. Israel wants bunker-busting bombs that only the U.S. has. ABC's Ian Pinnell on the damage so far.
ABC News verifying at least 20 Israeli strikes inside Iran since Friday, including two on nuclear facilities. The UN nuclear watchdog just now confirming damage at two sites.
The Gaza Health Ministry says seven more people were killed trying to get food after 51 died yesterday when Israeli forces opened fire on Gazans. Hurricane Eric has just formed on Mexico's Pacific coast, eyeing Acapulco, fifth named storm in a busy season. This is ABC News.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. An update to a UTV crash in Sauk County last week has been released. The operator sustained life-threatening injuries in a rollover crash last Tuesday morning on Coon Bluff Road north of County Road P in the town of Delona. The Sauk County Sheriff's Department reports that the operator, identified as Kalen Markinus, 21 of Wisconsin Dells, died Saturday. Markinus was transported from the scene with life-threatening injuries by MedFlight to a hospital in Madison last week. The initial investigation showed that Markinus was southbound on Coon Bluff Road and attempted a passing maneuver on another vehicle. She entered the ditch and overcorrected, causing the UTV to roll over several times. Kalen Markinus was not wearing a seatbelt and was ejected from the UTV. From a legislator in downtown Minneapolis to a veteran Ohio congresswoman, many lawmakers included in the suspected Minnesota gunman's writings and list of targets are vowing not to bow down. An acting U.S. attorney says the dozens of politicians included in the suspect's writings were Democrats. While some say the violence has prompted them to double down on their legislative work, at least one lawmaker postponed a town hall after learning she was a potential target. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is seeking landowners to host the gun deer hunt for hunters with disabilities this fall. Assistant Deer and Elk Specialist Brooke Van Handel says the program helps remove barriers. Interested landowners must have at least 60 acres of land available and be able to host at least three hunters. Landowners have through July 3rd to submit an application. The hunt runs October 4th through the 12th. More information is available on the DNR's website. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Brewers battle the Cubs. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers take on the Cubs tonight at Wrigley Field. The Miz, Jacob Mizorowski, making his second career start for Milwaukee. The Brewers won for 10 last night with runners in scoring position on the way to a 5-3 loss to the Cubs. Pat Murphy.
You look at the box scores tonight. If you look at 15 box scores, there's going to be six teams that are something like that. You got to hit with guys in scoring position, and we didn't.
The Cubs now with a 6.5 game lead over Milwaukee in the NL Central. Hockey. The Florida Panthers skating past the Edmonton Oilers 5-1 to win the Stanley Cup for a second year in a row, 4-2. NFL, the Packers' new president and CEO says there's no immediate plans to renew the contracts of Matt LaFleur or GM Brian Gutekunst. I asked Ed Policy what will be his focus as he takes over.
Keep the Packers in Green Bay. The big things there will be continuing to maintain and evolve Lambeau Field so that it remains not just iconic but also state-of-the-art.
That's the new Packers president, Ed Policy, with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy for today with a few showers and thunderstorms around and a high in the mid-70s. For tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms, then some clearing late, a low close to 60. Partly sunny, warmer, little muggy on Thursday, highs mid-80s.
Currently at 68.
Matt Nair on air.
From articles that I have seen, if you are a bagel purist, you should not toast your bagel. I think nothing's better than a toasted bagel and a schmear.
Folks, can we have a moment of honesty? Do you really like bagels, or do you like the schmear that is transported by them? Get rid of the stigma. If I walk into this room eating cream cheese out of a tub with a spoon.
Why is that wrong?
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Todd Michaels joins us now.
I have to give a shout out to Oshkosh. It's a very underrated city.
There was also a restaurant there I really liked. I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, Vitaly's was great. I may have gone to like a prom dinner there or something like back in my day too, Pete.
A little calzone before you tear it up in the dance floor.
There's nothing better than wearing a tuxedo and a little calzone in your cummerbund.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Pat Kreitlow, host of Mornings of Pat Kreitlow, along with Trigvi Olson, senior advisor at Lincoln Project, will be here to discuss the state happenings, national happenings, and more. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. News from the Center, WRCE.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 8:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Wednesday, June 18th. I'm up here in Chippewa Falls. Parker Olson is in Madison Studio A2. We will be joined shortly by Earl Ingram, and then later Melissa Baldoff. James Kelly will give us an update from our Chippewa Falls newsroom as well. But first, here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot to tell us that there's some rain going on out there. And then there's going to be some more rain, and then there's going to be some heat. Some high heat.
You really simplify it, Pat.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's basically what's going
to
happen.
It's wet and then it's hot. Thankfully, I don't have to give you the specifics. Brittany tracks all of those things. So here's where she says it's going to go.
Here we go. It's summer, right? Well, right. Not officially yet. Meteorologically, it is. But the first day of summer is just 2 days away and we are definitely going to be feeling it. So here's what we've got going on this morning. It's upper 50s temperature-wise up north. We've got some sunshine. Lucky you. Down south, not the same. It is cloudy, overcast, low 70s, so a little bit warmer. And we've got some rain moving in. Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, you're about to get some. Also, more is moving into western parts of the state. South, a lot of southern parts of the state are going to get hit with some soaking rain today. We could see some thunderstorms embedded in there, too. And far southeast, you could see some potentially flash flooding events going on because you could get 1 to 2 inches of rainfall total throughout today. So areas down south, it's going to be a soaker. Up north, a little bit less of that. We will get cloudy and we will see chances for showers and storms, especially this afternoon and evening, but none of them are really looking strong or severe. So as we go through tomorrow, we are going to start to heat things up a little bit more. Upper 70s to the low 80s. Showers and storms are expected again in the afternoon, and then another round at night, which could be strong to severe. And then, of course, more on Friday as a warm front lifts through. Those have the potential to be strong to severe once again. And then we're going to be in the sauna. That's what I'm calling it, because dew points are going to be in the mid-70s, which is pretty oppressive. That is very muggy, hot, and humid conditions. Paired with temperatures in the 90s, our heat index is going to feel like 100 degrees on both Saturday and Sunday. So start hydrating right now.
So we've got grandkids coming to visit, the younger ones this weekend, 3 and 6 years old. And so at first we thought, well, okay, pontoon ride, that's going to be a must. But then we looked, thought a little bit more about the forecast and decided that we got to head to the garage today. We got to dig out all those sprinkler toys.
There's a lot of really
a little kid slip and slide, and of course all the little the little water guns and things like that. So if anybody's interested, Kreitlow backyard, we'll have all the water toys out this weekend.
That is the best way to stay cool and have some smiles too. How adorable! I love it.
You know, when you mentioned the first day of summer, it gives me that every season changes. I get this whole thing about the Earth, you know, being on its axis the way that it is, and that's why you have. Like up at the North Pole, you're going to have 6 months of daylight, you know, as opposed to 6 months in the wintertime of complete and total darkness. And it's still, I know this goes way beyond the weather, But why are we tilted the way that we are? It's 23.5 degrees, because I looked it up, because that's what nerds do. But why? Why is it tilted that much, which gives us seasons and all those other good things? But, you know, there's speculation that maybe a long time ago, you know, there was a collision somewhere, you know, out there that knocked us off our axis a little bit. But
it sounds about right.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like the kind of thing, you know, as some other planet went, oh, I'm just going to slide by you right there. Don't worry about me.
And they said, oh, yep.
They said, oh,
that's exactly what happened.
Of course. Yep. And so it's just that's just my every 3 month appreciation for having seasons, because trust me, there's a lot to be said for living in the Caribbean. And don't get me wrong, there was a lot of good stuff about it. But when you leave and then come back, you realize how much you missed actual seasons.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. You know, I'm a big fan of that. So sometimes you look at things with new eyes. Thank you, Brittany. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
You're welcome. You too.
And there's my transition to looking at things with new eyes. And that would be bringing in Earl Ingram here to be talking about things that he covers in Milwaukee for Civic Media. There he is, the pride of Washington High School. Earl, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for being here. When I say looking at things with new eyes, what I mean about Milwaukee is this. Sherry and I lived there from 1987 to 1991 while she was attending the medical college. And both our daughters were born at the old St. Luke's Hospital down there in Milwaukee. And as you know, with any major American city, it goes through its cycles. And the cycle in the late 80s, early 90s was not necessarily kind to Milwaukee. And I go back there now and look at it with a new set of eyes. And I fall in love with it all over again each time going down there at the improvements that are being made. Obviously, it is far from perfect. There's always work to be done. But the fact that there are people willing to do that work, and it leads us into one of the stories we wanted to share this morning, and that's the Milwaukee skyline, which back in 1987 was one building, you know, the old U.S. Bank building and whatever it's called now. That skyline looks a lot different after all these years, and there are folks around the country that have taken notice.
Well, actually, I'd say folks around the world.
Yeah.
Architectural Digest has rated Milwaukee skyline as one of the top 17 in the world. And that's an amazing accomplishment for the city of Milwaukee, considering it's in competition here in the United States. When you think about skylines, you think about New York City, Chicago, Seattle, you know, and those types of cities. And then you also think globally, you think about, Hong Kong, Dubai, Tokyo, Shanghai, Toronto. Those are all spectacular skylines, and now Milwaukee is listed as one of those top 17. And so for people who live in this state who have not visited Milwaukee, they have no concept, no clue whatsoever about the beauty that is downtown Milwaukee and the skyline that continues to evolve.
Well, and again, it does so in a way that when you go, well, wait, it's one of those smaller cities. Well, yeah, what you don't have there is you don't have the clutter. You have the diversity of the designs, which means the diversity of the usage that's in there. And again, it really reflects improvements that have been made in the city over time. And I mean, those improvements are, you know, continuing to this day. I mean, you've got something that's going up there. What's it going to be called? The largest ever constructed building, something like that.
It's called the Edison. It's mass timber, an engineered product created by combining layers of lumber into strong material touted for its environmental benefits and aesthetic appeal. Milwaukee had the largest building of that nature, and they held that for a few years, and then Australia, okay, they eclipsed that tower that Milwaukee has had the honor of having the largest building, and we now turn around and we're eclipsing the one that they have in Australia. But beautiful, beautiful architecture, beautiful, beautiful building. And so again, if you people who haven't been downtown Milwaukee, the aesthetics of it during the summer, we're about to kick off Summerfest on tomorrow. And if you haven't been to the Summerfest grounds and that lake that's has been developed to some degree, spectacular.
The building itself, that as Earl mentioned, is called the Edison, and it is going to be 32 stories tall, 378 apartment units there. And again, most of the materials will be coming from U.S. supplies, but not all of them by any stretch of the imagination. And I do recall seeing a story sometime back that, you know, Donald Trump's tariffs are going to cause some issues with construction here. Because, again, we get a lot of timber, say, from Canada, for example, one of our best allies. But Donald Trump is picking a fight with all of our allies here. And I can't even tell you for sure, Earl, if these tariffs on timber are going to affect the building of the Edison Tower. I don't know if they know, because with Trump, you get something one day and then you hear something else the other day, which, again, if you're building one of the largest ever, you know, mass timber buildings, that's got to be a little perplexing.
Well, I'm pretty sure that it probably is, because I don't know if that timber is produced here in this country. And so their plans for erecting this building had been in the makings for somewhere around 3 to 5 years, and now they broke ground just the other day. And so, you know, we'll see. But after it's all said and done, it's going to be another beautiful, beautiful addition to what is absolutely a beautiful, beautiful downtown Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was looking at, I did just find an article from Tom Dakin in the Journal Sentinel about the imported materials that are there. And some of those imported materials are not going to arrive until spring of next year. And so apparently it's noted in the article here that creates a lot of uncertainty regarding how trade negotiations are going to ebb and flow over the next year or so here. But when all is said and done, because this mass timber type of construction is more environmentally sustainable, it is closer to carbon neutral, it's going to reduce construction costs. And again, it just comes back to the smart kind of construction that's going on in Milwaukee and some of these other cities, because, I mean, you know, Earl, anybody can slap something together, but when you actually put some thought into the process, you end up having a downtown that is much more, you know, workable as a result, and where people actually still want to work and play. And the funny thing is, for all the grousing you hear from some of our suburban friends out there, they still need a place like Milwaukee to come work and play.
Well, absolutely. And that will be forthcoming in the next month or so with all the different festivals and all the different activities that take place in downtown Milwaukee.
Yeah, they sure will. Not the least of them being the Brewers taking on the Cubs. Now, they're doing that at Wrigley right now, but, you know, that Central Division showdown, you know, will be coming back here to Milwaukee before you know it. The Cardinals were just here in town last week. The Brewers, unfortunately, are on the losing end of yesterday's opener of that series with the Cubs. I believe the final score was 5-3 here. There was this two-run home run by Isaac Collins at one point. And unfortunately, Chad Patrick, the starting pitcher, just couldn't hold back a fifth inning rally. So the Cubs go on to win by a score of 5-3. The Cubs are now up in the division, 6.5 games over the second place Brewers. They'll go back tonight to Wrigley Field and try to even out the series. The pregame will be starting at 6:30 on several Civic media stations. Jacob Mizorowski will be pitching in his second ever major league game. And that's good news because, I mean, the kid had a no-hitter through 5 innings, but then was feeling some cramps and some soreness and left the game. I was fearing the worst, but apparently, you know, things are okay, that he's getting set to get started against the Cubs here again tonight. So you can hear that on several Civic media stations. A local update is coming up next for some of you. For those of you hanging here, we're going to continue our conversation with Earl Ingram. I think we'll get into a little Summerfest chatter coming up. And when we're all back together in our next half hour, we'll be talking to Melissa Baldoff. That's all here from the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota. Thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. May 12th, the U.S. Department of Justice reportedly requested all the state of Colorado's records relating to the 2024 federal election and the preservation of records related to the 2020 election. The request may relate to President Trump's effort to free a convicted Colorado election official. The records request is massive. In November 2024, there were 4.65 million registered Colorado voters, 3.3 million of whom cast ballots in the presidential election. Then consider the records from every electronic ballot tabulator, voter registration and verification documents for each voter, and more. Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold told NPR, "What they're going to do with all this data, I don't know, but I'm sure they'll use it to push their ridiculous disinformation and lies to the American public," she said. There is speculation that it may be related to convicted Mesa County elections official Tina Peters, sentenced to 9 years for giving voting machine access to conspiracy theorists tied to MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell. The week before the Colorado records request, DOJ was directed by President Trump to, quote, take all necessary action to help secure the release of Peters. To date, Colorado has reportedly provided two copies of its master voter list to DOJ and its 2024 voter history file. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Mark Sommerhauser, the communications director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, analyzing the impacts of the big brutal bill.
That number that you mentioned of nearly $15,000 per person, literally about a quarter of the state's economy.
Basically a quarter of the state's economy coming from the federal government. I'm not hearing from Republicans in the state in their biennial budget planning any sort of contingency plan for major disruption in federal funding coming into the state.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Joanne Krulotz, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin's office confirmed that her name was on the manifesto from the Minnesota assassin. A spokesperson in Baldwin's office told Civic Media's Dan Schaefer that Baldwin was informed by law enforcement that she was included on the alleged shooter's list of names and that she, quote, remains focused on the things that matter most here, honoring the legacy and life of Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark, praying for the other victims who are fighting for their lives, and condemning this abhorrent, senseless political violence. At the Capitol, a request for increased security ahead of a scheduled floor session this week. A spokesman for Assembly Speaker Robin Voss confirmed Monday that increased security presence has been requested. That follows the weekend assassination of a Minnesota state lawmaker and her husband and the wounding of a second lawmaker and his wife. Unlike the majority of state Capitol buildings and many county courthouses in Wisconsin, visitors to the Capitol in Madison can enter through numerous doors and are not subject to metal detectors or security searches. Security is provided by officers with the Capitol Police. A Wisconsin dairy farmer has alleged in a federal lawsuit that the Trump administration is illegally denying financial assistance to white farmers by continuing programs that favor minorities. Conservative Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty filed the lawsuit Monday against the U.S. Department of Agriculture in federal court in Wisconsin on behalf of a white dairy farmer, Adam Faust. The lawsuit alleges that the government continues to implement diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that were instituted under former President Joe Biden. Faust was among several farmers who successfully sued the Biden administration in 2021 for race discrimination in a USDA program. The Supreme Court is ordering a New York court to take a new look at whether some religious organizations should be excluded from a state regulation requiring health insurance plans to cover abortions. The justices acted Monday after the court unanimously ruled earlier in June that Wisconsin discriminated against a Catholic charity by forcing it to pay state unemployment taxes. The New York case poses a similar issue because the state exempts religious employers if their purpose is to spread religious values and they primarily employ and serve people of their faith. But religious groups that serve and employ people regardless of their beliefs don't qualify for the exemption. The Trump administration's Justice Department has begun targeting Democratic and presidential swing states with demands for election data or changes to voter registration procedures. While the request may seem technical and mundane collectively, they suggest the department is moving away from its traditional stance of protecting access to the ballot box. Instead, the actions address concerns that have been raised by a host of conservative activists following years of false claims surrounding elections in the U.S. By targeting certain states, presidential battlegrounds are those controlled by Democrats. They also could be foreshadowing an expanded role for the department in future elections. A third of Wisconsin's population doesn't drive, and that number is expected to grow. To address the issue, the state's Department of Transportation is taking action. There was a gathering last week of what's called the Non-Driver Advisory Committee. It comprised of advocates, service providers, and government officials, and they discussed how new technology and community partnerships can improve access for non-drivers. Most of Wisconsin's non-drivers include seniors, students, people with disabilities, and low-income individuals. A person was found unresponsive following a motorcycle crash Saturday night near Amplify St. Joseph's Hospital in the city of Hillsborough. An officer with the Hillsborough Police Department was conducting traffic enforcement while parked in a stationary position near the Hillsborough Fire and EMS garage. At approximately 10:35, the officer observed a motorcycle traveling at a high rate of speed entering the city limits. As the motorcycle approached the squad car and entered the city limits, radar showed the motorcycle traveling at 74 miles per hour. The motorcycle passed another motorist traveling westbound, continuing at a high rate of speed towards the residential and business areas of the city. The officer activated their emergency lights and siren and began traveling towards the motorcycle, but ultimately lost sight of the motorcycle as it passed through the 800 block of Water Avenue. The officer continued traveling westbound on Water Avenue, ultimately locating a motorcycle that had crashed near the parking lot of Amplify St. Joseph's Hospital emergency room. Upon locating the motorcycle, the officer immediately located an unresponsive male party laying in the parking lot believed to be the operator. The officer quickly retrieved emergency room personnel who came to assist and immediately began life-saving measures. The operator was subsequently transported to Amplify Gunderson in La Crosse via medical helicopter with life-threatening injuries. Due to the nature of the crash, the Hillsborough Police Department requested assistance from the Vernon County Sheriff's Office as well as the Wisconsin State Patrol Technical Reconstruction Unit. The Vernon County Office of Emergency Management has announced a major upgrade in its public alert and notification capabilities by transitioning from the Nexel platform to Everbridge, a leading global provider of critical event management solutions. This change, effective July 1st, is part of an ongoing commitment to ensuring the safety and well-being of Vernon County residents. It also has an internal component for county staff to deliver faster, more targeted, and more reliable emergency notifications. Everbridge will be the primary system used to issue alerts related to severe weather, public safety threats, road closures, evacuations, and other time-sensitive events. Another advantage is that Everbridge will be an opt-out system. The feature Resident Connect is being utilized to pull open source cell and landline phone numbers to get greater reach. Everbridge also provides greater customization geotargeting precision, and integration with other emergency systems, ensuring residents receive the most relevant and timely information possible. This improved functionality also enhances coordination among first responders and other public agencies during emergencies. Residents previously subscribed to Nixel will automatically be transitioned into Everbridge, but are encouraged to sign up for Everbridge alerts via email or download the Everbridge mobile app to receive critical information multiple ways starting July 1st. You've been listening to WRCE's local news on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google Play stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. A unanimous Wisconsin Supreme Court has sided with the Democratic State Attorney General in a long-running battle over a law passed by Republicans who wanted to weaken the office in a lame duck legislative session more than 6 years ago. The court ruled unanimously on Tuesday that it's unconstitutional to require the Attorney General to get permission from a Republican-controlled legislative committee to settle certain civil lawsuits. The court said the law is a separation of powers violation. A nationwide opioid settlement is moving forward. Attorneys general from all 54 U.S. states and territories have reached a sweeping multi-billion-dollar settlement with Purdue Pharma and the Sackler family over marketing and distribution of opioids, Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call announced Monday. The $7.4 billion agreement with the makers of OxyContin has not been finalized, and Call said the next step in the process is that local governments will be asked to join the settlement contingent on bankruptcy court proceedings. Under this settlement, Wisconsin state and local governments would receive as much as $80 million over the next 15 years. The Wisconsin Election Commission is mailing postcards to over 200,000 registered voters in the state, advising them to confirm their eligibility. The commission is advising anyone who receives one of the postcards with official voter registration notice on it that they have until July 15th to respond. The postcards are being sent to people who have not voted over the past 4 years and ask the recipients if they want to remain a registered voter at their listed address. If recipients don't respond, their voter registration will be deactivated on July 31st. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Carrie Bradshaw, a.k.a. Sarah Jessica Parker, recently spoke to Huffington Post UK. During the interview, she talked about the backlash she received for playing Bradshaw on HBO's Sex and the City. Parker discussed the double standard between men and women and how women are treated differently when they're portrayed as cheaters on TV. Parker made a point to say that her character on And Just Like That is judged similarly decades later. New episodes of And Just Like That premiere Thursdays on Max. For those of you who are like me and live in a remote area, there is good news regarding a new comedy to check out. Friendship is now available to stream, according to the New York Post. The A24 cringe comedy that asks the question, should men have friends, stars Tim Robinson and Paul Rudd and had a modest but successful limited theatrical run. Friendship is available to stream on Amazon Prime. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy for today with a few showers and thunderstorms around and a high in the mid-70s. For tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms, then some clearing late, a low close to 60. Partly sunny, warmer, little muggy on Thursday, highs mid-80s. Currently at 68.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers. Through CPR education and access to AEDs, nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Ken, as I like to call him, my least favorite Martin, chairman of the Democratic National Committee.
The other night I said to myself for the first time, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
Matt Flynn.
You go into combat and the general goes, I'm afraid. He reminds me of the coach of the Jets back in the 90s. The other team would come on the field and say, boy, they look big. No, I swear to God. And the Jets lost 12 games. I mean, right? You can't have this kind of stuff. Get this guy out of here. Put in Ben Wickler.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station. And on the app, Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
We'll talk with former Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen about his bipartisan effort with the Democracy Defense Project.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
In today's edition of our daily newsletter, sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. We've got a story on the Wisconsin Center for Dairy Research as part of our June Dairy Month coverage. All kinds of ways that scientists look at having an impact on the quality, the texture, the flavor of cheese, a cheese's shelf life, marketability, and more. So learn about that. Learn specifically about Colby cheese, part of one of the many that were invented right here in Wisconsin. Also an article about Door County fish boils. We're getting to that season as well. And then up on our website, several stories that you should be checking out as well, including 9 Wisconsin businesses staffed by people living with disabilities, and a recap of some of the best fly fishing spots in Wisconsin. All of that and more on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Remember, if you can't listen to us live, you can pod this program. Listen to us anytime on demand. Head over to Spotify or Apple and subscribe to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Time for our climate check with political strategist Melissa Baldoff, who also had a busy weekend at the state Democratic convention, where her hubs Joe Zepecki will join us tomorrow and talk about the campaign for state party chair. As usual, everybody puts on a unified face for Devin Remeker, but Joe could not have been more gracious in thanking Devin and William Garcia. And Melissa, I think you'd probably add a special thank you to all the folks who helped back Joe during his campaign. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. And yes, thank you so much to everybody who, supported Joe, of course, but also just everybody who was able to show up and attend the convention. It was a really lovely weekend. And it was, a fun and different experience for me, having been to so many of these as somebody who was a staff person for WISDEMS and helping to put on the convention for a number of years, and then, attending them, with various, bosses or, candidates, clients over the years. And so this was, my first one just kind of going to, but not really just going to, because I was there with my husband running for party office. So it was a little bit different experience all around, but still a good one.
Yeah, very much so. And I had forgotten, and I've done this a couple of times now, showing my age, but the convention moved to a Saturday-Sunday format recently. Well, I don't know how recently, but I was used to it being a Friday-Saturday thing. And I will take note that former state party chair Mike Tate had a post the other day about that, this was an interesting experiment, but maybe we should revisit the Friday-Saturday format. I'm not going to say one is right or wrong. I don't know if it's preference or logistics or whatever you want to call it. But if it was up to me, I'd still make it more of a Friday-Saturday thing. I don't know if you notice any difference in terms of turnout and, who's
significant,
able to make it.
Significant turnout difference. There were, less than 1,000 votes cast for party chair at this convention. And the last time, 10 years ago, the last time there was a very hotly contested party chairs race, there were like 1,400 mm-hmm. votes cast. So it was a significant drop off. And there was also a big drop off in the number of delegates that registered versus who voted. So, you know, I agree with Mike Tate that it's, you know, an opportunity to look at, you know, did the old format work better? I know that part of the reason people in the first place wanted to switch to Saturday and Sunday was just concerns maybe about, is that easier for people, you know, than trying to take Friday off of work? But, you know, I think that there's, you know, good points on both sides. Like you said, it's something to look at. I would also say it's something to look at if there are virtual options for attendance, if there are ways that people can, you know, maybe vote for a party chair, you know, at their, you know, congressional level caucus. You know, so, you know, I just think there's a lot we can talk about as a party to be more inclusive, to make this more accessible, because, you know, going away for a weekend in the Dells over Father's Day weekend is not cheap. And, you know, we want to bring in more people. And, you know, if you can't afford to go stay at a resort or a hotel nearby for the weekend, you know, you're priced out of going. If you're maybe somebody who doesn't work, you know, Monday through Friday, 9-to-5 job, and you have to work on the weekends, then you're not able to go. If you're a single parent who doesn't have anyone to watch your kids so you can go, you know, those are all things that make it, you know, put up a barrier to people being able to participate in the process. And as Democrats, you know, we believe in making our party more accessible to everybody. And, you know, if we want to bring in more people and get them as a part of the process, I think it's, you know, it's worth conversations.
From Ardith on Facebook, I was sorry to see Jill come up short, but I hope you two will continue to be very visible because I think you are the future of Wisconsin fair and honest government. That was nice of you, Ardith. Thank you for
putting that up. Well, that was very kind to hear. Thank you so much, Ardith.
And not everybody from the family could be a part of the convention because there was split allegiances. There were people that had to get over to Polish Fest, but for good reason, I hear.
Yes, absolutely. So usually our family is at Polish Fest, and usually quite a number of Joe's family is working at Polish Fest. And this year we have royalty in the family. I am so proud of our niece Everett, who is a Little Miss Polish Fest princess. We were so sad that we were not able to be there in person to cheer her on in her pursuit of the crown, but other family was there to be, you know, to support her, cheer her on. We got to see video and are so proud of her and her sister Micah, who was also a runner-up in her age group. So we're very proud of our little Polish princesses and look forward to you know, celebrating Everett's reign alongside her and being at other festivals with the family over the summer.
That is just wonderful. And I do believe German Fest is another big one that you and Joe like to attend.
Absolutely. So anyone who wants to see Joe again, who likes what they've heard and seen from Joe Zepecki, can come find him at German Fest, where he will be, you know, grilling brats.
Yes, again, July 25th, 26th, 27th. So be on the lookout for that. We were talking with Earl Ingram in our last segment about all Summerfest and all the other festivals all summer long in the Milwaukee area. You really do want to check it out. Let's turn our attention to what's happening in politics. And this one's a little unusual because, I mean, obviously, in these climate check segments, we do want to talk about the virtues of things like the Inflation Reduction Act and the tax credits that are going to create a whole new generation of clean energy jobs. So I'm not diminishing those in any way, shape, or form. When I set it up this way, Melissa, to say the House Trump big bloated boondoggle of a budget bill took out a lot of those credits. And also, of course, would do tremendous damage to Medicaid and all these other essential services. Now the bill's over in the Senate, and Senate Republicans there are not at all chagrined about what they're hearing about cuts to Medicaid and other vital programs. In fact, they added more cuts onto Medicaid and things like that, but they did salvage in their bill some of the green energy tax credits, which really tells you something about their priorities. I mean, yes, it's good for the climate. It's good for all that. But, I mean, they actually made deeper cuts to Medicaid so that they could preserve some of these clean energy tax credits. It just says something about priorities these days. But I guess we'll take out the good news, take away the good news from it, that these tax credits have some life support again to create new jobs in Wisconsin and elsewhere.
Yes. But I don't want to give them too much credit here, because right. I don't want to say this is good news. I'm going to just say this is slightly worse news.
Yes.
Slightly less worse news. Excuse me. Yeah. Slightly less worse news. So they did make some improvements to the House version, but they are still making very significant cuts to solar, wind, and other incentives here. I would say this is definitely falling short of being supportive of clean energy tax credits. But there are still some Republicans, Senate Republicans, talking about it. And there's still a little bit of time for some movement. And that's why we need people to keep talking to their senators and their members of Congress, because there is still opportunity to make changes here, which I think is the biggest takeaway people should have, that their voices and their advocacy have made a difference so far and can continue to do so. We've got some time. I mean, things are moving. There's that self-imposed July 4th deadline, but there is not a whole lot of room left between now and then for Republicans to meet that deadline. It's, looking more and more likely that they won't make it. So either way, though, the urgency is real, that we need folks reaching out and talking about this and talking about this publicly. What we're seeing from the Senate version is that they still would be phasing out these tax credits. They would just do it a little bit more slowly.
Right.
Which is slightly good news.
Slightly less worse. Yeah.
Right. But, it really does fall short of, giving people the ability to, take advantage of these credits and improve their resilience, save money, and, boost our economy.
And by the way, just to show that they are still almost entirely in lockstep with Trump's priorities, the EV incentives that are meant to move the U.S. away from fossil fuels, those would be gutted even more rapidly under the Senate bill. So, it is really a case of self-interest, where they see something that we've talked about in this segment before, that a lot of the clean energy jobs being created thanks to these tax credits and the Inflation Reduction Act are actually happening in red states and in red districts at a far greater rate than in districts and states that have Democratic elected officials. And so they're seeing the thing that is, most narrowly in their self-interest and saying, oh, well, we're good with those after all, I guess. But I mean, that's the only reason. It has nothing. There's nothing altruistic about this whatsoever.
No, of course not. There's nothing here that's, doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do. The motivation to do the right thing would be to, absolutely protect themselves and their interests. But if we can get something positive out of that, that selfishness, I'll take it. Right. If the outcome is that we get the right policy, whatever the motivation is, I'll take it, but it's not the ideal way to get this done.
No, our theme today, less worse. That's
right.
Sometimes you take what you can get. Melissa Baldoff, thank you so much. And we will talk again real soon.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you so much. Coming up, a local update is next for some of you, followed by Matt and Air on Air with Dr. Kristen Lyerly joining in at about 9:30. For those of you hanging here, we will wrap up the program with some Western and Northern Wisconsin news headlines with James Kelly right here in Chippewa Falls. And tomorrow, Todd Alba, Chad Holmes, Sean O'Malley, Joe Zepecki. Remember, you can follow me over at upnorthnewswi.com. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Are you over 50 and constantly feeling tired, bloated, or just a little off? Don't ignore it. Those could be signs that your liver is crying for help. As we age, our liver, which is essential for metabolism, digestion, immunity, and detoxification, needs extra support and protection. If neglected, it can leave you feeling sluggish and constantly off your game. That's where Active Liver from New Nordic comes in. Available in easy-to-take tablets or delicious gummies, Active Liver combines powerful natural ingredients like turmeric, milk thistle, and globe artichoke extract to help support healthy liver function. With Active Liver, you're giving your body an essential daily defense against toxins from alcohol, fatty foods, and sweets, helping you reclaim your energy, improve digestion, lose the bloat, and strengthen your immunity so you can look and feel your best again. Protect your liver and give it the support that it deserves by making Active Liver from New Nordic part of your daily wellness routine. Find Active Liver in stores at your local CVS, Meijer Grocery, or online at Amazon or NewNordicUSA.com.
Cobus Twin Bus is hiring. It's drivers that they need.
Do you remember your school bus driver? The one who got you to school safely? Now it's your turn to make a difference. Join us at Cobus Inn for our open bus hiring event, Thursday, June 26, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Take a seat behind the wheel of a bus and see how easy it really is. Learn about our generous bonus program. Visit CobusIn.com for the location near you.
Cobus Twin Bus is hiring. It's the perfect job for me.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Todd Michaels joins us now.
I have to give a shout out to Oshkosh. It's a very underrated city.
There was also a restaurant there I really liked. I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, the Tally's was great. I may have gone to like a prom dinner there or something like that back in my day too, Pete.
A little calzone before you tear it up in the dance floor.
There's nothing better than wearing a tuxedo and a little calzone in your cummerbund.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
We hope you're having a great Wednesday morning, and thanks for joining us here on WRCE during Pat Kreitlow Mornings. I am Phil Nee, and it's time to take a look at local sports. The Ridge and Valley Conference is out with its all-conference baseball selections this week. Seneca won the league going 12-2. Weston and Ithaca tied for second at 11-3. And DeSoto went 9-5. North Crawford 7-7 during a very competitive conference. First-team all-conference members include from Weston, senior Garrett Jennings and junior Isaac Jennings. From Ithaca, senior Sammy Clary. Wesley Nelson, a senior, and junior, Houston Bolin. From DeSoto, Finn Roble and Bryce Schultz, both juniors. North Crawford juniors, Landon Blaha and Colin Jacobus. And from Seneca, Dawson Davidson and Owen Opright, both seniors, and Gage Wall, a junior. Cooper Lummis of Wazika Steuben, a junior, rounds out the first-team all-conference. Second-team members include Wyatt Hilby, a senior from Ithaca, DeSoto senior Harris Krieger, Kickapoo's Evan Wallace, a senior, North Crawford Sawyer Staluka, a sophomore, seniors Briar Wall and Jack Gallagher from Seneca, senior Brett Wagner of Wazika Steuben, and Garrett Granger, a senior with Weston, all named to the second team. Honorable mention players from the Ridge and Valley include DeSoto's Lane Gelf, Cody Burns of Ithaca, Jace Nagel, Kickapoo, Zach Hansen, Lafarge, Zach Bender, North Crawford, and Jackson Konacek from Seneca, along with Bentley Dooms, a freshman from Wasika Steuben, and Trevor Westfall, a junior with the Weston Silver Eagles. Special awards were given out, including the sportsmanship team. They include Peyton Krieger of DeSoto, Ben Hipsch, Ithaca, Evan Wallace, Kickapoo, Jordan Franks, Lafarge, North Crawford's Hunter Smith, Hunter Hagensek of Seneca, Ruger Patz of Wasika Steuben, and Hunter Coy, Weston. The Pitcher of the Year was recognized as senior Jack Gallagher of Seneca, the Player of the Year, Ithaca senior Sammy Clary, and the Coach of the Year, North Crawford head coach Adam Stenner. That's a look at the Ridge and Valley All-Conference baseball selections this year. Yesterday at the state baseball tournament, it was Division IV action in the morning. Johnson Creek got by Pittsville 6-2, and Pacelli was a winner against Edgar by a final of 14-2. In the afternoon session, Fenimore suffered a loss to Kewaunee 5-3. The Golden Eagles season ended at 25-4 at the state tournament. Kenosha St. Joseph advanced to the D3 title game with a 14-4 win over Barron. Today, the action gets underway at 9 o'clock. Aquinas takes on Seymour. Aquinas is the number 2 seed, Seymour number 3. And the number 1 seed, New Berlin Eisenhower, will play number 4 seed, Reedsburg, in the other Division II semifinal. Reedsburg seeded 4th, embarking on their 5th state tournament appearance, their first since 2011. The most notable of their previous 4 experiences was a runner-up performance way back in 1958. This season, Reedsburg was a champion in the small division of the Badger Conference. Action continues at the state baseball tournament coming up later today near Appleton. All the while, it's American Legion baseball getting underway in full force. Yesterday, the Gaze Mills Post 308-220 Grizzlies lost a doubleheader to Black River Falls Legion Post 200 by a score of 6-4 and 6-2 in the nightcap. The third week of games for the Church League softball season were played last night at Crosscup Park. Richland Baptist Temple won, down St. Mary's 10-8. After a slow start, the bats of Mason Jelenic, Hayden Jelenic, and Jordan Keegan helped close the gap for St. Mary's, but Baptist Temple hung on for the win. Free Methodist bested Grace Community Church 16-1. Adam Burns, Nathan Phillips, and Liz Niemeyer each had 4 hits for Free Methodist. The Mission shut out Boscobel Assembly of God 16-0. Adam Windsor was 4-for-4 with a home run for the Mission, and Andrew Thompson led off the game with an inside-the-park home run. And Richland Baptist Temple 2 defeated Church of the Nazarene 10-7. Connor Hying and Malachi Fretz each had home runs in the win. The Knights of Columbus had a bye. There will be no games played the week of June 24th due to other events at Crosscup Park. Church League teams will resume play on July 1st. At Quail Run, it was action last night in the Tuesday Men's Golf League. Aaron Halvorsen birdied hole 2 and fired a 39. He was matched by Rich Barrancott. They had the top 2 scores, 39s at Quail Run. Also, Rod Reitz with a 40, Neil Mahoney, Peter Lawrence, and Jarrett McDonald each shot 41s. Other golfers with holes played under par, Ray Lindvig birdied hole 1, Tony Doherty birdied hole 8, Ryan Pockstadt with a birdie on hole 8. Terry Wheaton with a flag prize win, longest putt on hole 1, Jarrett McDonald with the closest to the pin on hole 3, Ken Nick Sr., closest second shot on hole 5. Ray Lindvig, closest to the pin on hole 7. And Ken Nick Sr., longest drive on hole number 9 during Quail Run Golf League men's action. The Brewers were not able to hold on to an early 2-run lead Isaac Collins provided, eventually losing to the Cubs 5-3. Collins slammed his 3rd home run of the season in the 2nd inning. Seiya Suzuki put the Cubs up with a 3-run shot in the 5th. Rookie Jacob Mizorowski starts Game 2 of the series coming up tonight on WRCE, FM 107.7 and AM 1450. Elsewhere in the National League, Miami 8-3 over Philadelphia, Colorado 10, Washington 6, Atlanta 5, the Mets 4, the Dodgers over San Diego 8-6. In the American League, the Angels 4, Yankees nothing, Baltimore 5-1 over Tampa Bay, Kansas City 6, Texas 1, Seattle 8, Boston nothing, and Houston 13-3 over the Athletics. In interleague play, Detroit 7-3 over Pittsburgh, Toronto 5, Arizona 4, St. Louis 12, the White Sox 2, Cincinnati 6-5 over Minnesota, Cleveland 3, and San Francisco 2. Last night in the NHL Finals, the Florida Panthers repeated as Stanley Cup champions by beating the Edmonton Oilers 5-1 in Game 6 of the final. They are the NHL's first back-to-back winners since Tampa Bay in 2020 and 21, and the third team to do it this century. I'm Phil Nee with sports on WRCE during Pat Kreitlow Mornings.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Wayne Cabot. Sources tell ABC News President Trump is considering recommendations from his national security team, including giving Israel American military assets for its war with Iran, a risky move not just militarily.
Deepening America's involvement could also be politically risky. The president pledged to stop all wars. Even some Republicans are cautious, and Democrats pushing for the U.S. to step back.
People suing Purdue Pharma are waiting to hear from a judge today about the settlement. ABC's Jim Ryan.
Every U.S. attorney general has signed off, and now a bankruptcy judge will decide the next step in the $7 billion settlement against Purdue Pharma and its owners, the Sackler family. Purdue's opioids are blamed for thousands of overdoses in the past 30 years. The judge is expected to give the plaintiffs until September 30th to vote on whether to accept or reject the offer.
Dead at 55, Food Network star Ann Burrell found unresponsive in her New York City home. This is ABC News.